Right now, on a Tuesday morning, we'll be joined by Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack. Appraise This. You can find the appraisal guys where? At tqag.com on the web or right here on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. How are you?
I am absolutely fine because we're expecting 10 to 18 inches of snow Wednesday night into Thursday.
Wow.
Hey, it's, you know, it's wintertime. It's here, you know?
Yes.
What the heck? What can you do about it? But I do have a thing that I have to ask you about before you guys get into what you want to talk about. I just, for the heck of it, just to make myself laugh a little bit and feel a little less broke, a little more broke than normal, I just did a search, top sales, auction sales of art in 2020. And I'm amazed. I don't know why, but I still am amazed at some of the prices that they see. Francis Bacon has won $84.6 million.
Uh-huh.
I know you're a billionaire, and I know it's an investment, but still,
it's chump change.
Yeah, it really is hard to wrap your mind around that because, like I said, most of the time, but there's another one that was sold, Wu Bin. Now, at least I heard the first artist I know of, but Wu Bin's painting went for $76.6 million, and most of this art when it's won't be seen.
Correct. Yeah. Well, that's the one thing that we've talked about that on the show a long time ago with Jill, and I think both she and I are unanimous in this. Art is meant to be seen and enjoyed and not squirreled away somewhere.
Well, you know, I'm looking at like the third biggest seller was a Lichtenstein, Nude with Joyous Painting. Now, see, once again, there's another artist that I'm familiar with, a little more reasonable at $46.2 million.
Well, that was a bargain at twice the price.
Well, you know, it really is probably because 10 years down the line, they're almost priceless.
Well, possibly, but what did you say the top number was?
Well, in this story that I Googled, the first one that I saw in this article was a painting by Francis Bacon, triptych inspired by the Orestia of, I can't even pronounce the name. It was $84.6
million. 84. Yeah. Okay. And I bring this up because I just want to talk about the Portrait of Dr. Gachet by Van Gogh sold in 1990 for $82.5 million. And that was a record at that time. Now, these aren't the numbers that you're talking about are not record prices, but for 2020 and where the economy is. And when you look at things, you know, it's actually things have been selling. They've been selling well, but also a lot of people have said that the great stuff people have held on to because they were a little leery. They weren't sure if this market, with the pandemic and with everything else, that things were going to sell. And so to have these numbers in this kind of situation, I guess, in this year of just uncertainty, I think that it really shows that there's a strength, that there's some strength in the market for these works of art, for these masterpieces, for these pieces that have come out and have performed really well. And especially to have those numbers show up, not that they're record-breaking, but they're very strong for this economy.
You see, what confuses me is you have people that pay $20 and $30 million. One person paid close to $1 billion for a certain type of car. But when people, it seems like when people make this investment in classic, I mean truly classic automobiles, they want people to see it. You know, it's an investment, and they know they're going to make money in the future. But their power behind it is, damn it, I really love that vehicle. And you know what? I want people to know I have it.
And I want to share it.
Yeah.
Well, Then now what you're getting into is the different psyches of the different disciplines in collecting, because there are some, depending on what the asset is that's being sold, art has a tendency to be purchased and squirreled away anonymously. But there again, on the other hand, there are certain other things like comic books, or for some reason the publicity for those seem to, and who buys these things seems to be a little looser. But because some of these paintings, like you say, they're not going to be seen by anybody, and the only, if you don't catch the a passing article on that particular day when it sells, you're not going to find out about these things. So, and to me, that's kind of a double-edged sword as far as a collector. I don't like the fact that there are big works of art that have been purchased privately and are never seen by the public, because what does an artist do but paint something for someone to, for people to enjoy? But if it's one person who ends up getting it and squirreling it away, these things sometimes never even get seen. I mean, how many times have we done a show where a painting that's by an old master that has never been seen by the public was stolen from a private collection and it finally comes to light? I mean, those things, when they happen, that's what makes the news. And I think it's the same thing with people buying this, with this, all this income, buying this expensive art and then just not letting the public see it, you know, just buying it for your own private collection without sharing it. That I have an issue with that. I really do.
Yeah, you know, I know that, like I said, I know that people that make investments, they're not necessarily, I'm going to say, art fanatics, but they're, it's like anybody else who plays the stock market that's really successful in it. They know the commodities. They're pretty secure in what they do, and it's done as an investment. I truly do understand that. And it seems a little cold to me, especially when an artist that originally makes the piece, they're not thinking about that. They're thinking about the beauty and what people see in the piece. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm. Right. Well, and right on that same vein is that we have a follow-up to something that we had talked about that you brought up a couple weeks ago, is the Metropolitan Opera's curtain that was done by Marc Chagall. And that ended up selling. Greg, you have the information there.
Yeah.
It doesn't say who it sold to. Remember,
no.
This curtain is huge. Yeah. Give them the size, too.
Well, the curtain was estimated at 250, and it was from the Magic Flute, the 1964 production, or excuse me, 1967 production. And he didn't just do that particular thing. He also did the costumes, and there were a number of other scenic curtains that he did for this production. But this was the final curtain, and it was the show curtain. So, and it was estimated at $250,000 to $450,000. And of course, it covered the entire proscenium of the Metropolitan Opera. So you know how large that had to be. It was 20 meters in height. So let's basically say 3 feet. So 20 times three. So it's like 65 or 70 feet big. Or tall. So, but it ended up selling for, it sold for 900 with the buyer's premium. It sold for close to $1 million. It sold for $993,312. So, it did. We were talking about this, like, who's going to buy this monster?
That somebody found
paid
home.
Almost $1 million for.
And they've got the room to display it.
Exactly. Now, nobody, you know, nobody's going to see this. The only time people are going to see this now is just from this news story. That's what I was saying before. I can't imagine, you know, something this large. Where would you? I think it would be really amazing to have it displayed somewhere every once in a while. You know, it's kind of like a special occasion for Chagall, you know, like a new production of something or other, or Chagall's birthday, or celebrating Chagall, you know, that someplace would actually show this on an occasional basis, or even find a place where it would be hanging permanently. But it's unfortunate.
And there are places like that. I mean, Mass MoCA is not unique. It's unique to our area, and it's unique to our region. But they have a whole campus full of buildings that could handle. And there obviously are other places like that, not only around this country, but around the world, where you're right. Something like that could be put out and on display, let's say twice a year even, at different locations for people to view, and just be hung in these art places that are old factories that have the room to put them in.
Well, one of the things we have to remember also is that today, art doesn't necessarily have to be in a museum to be seen and to be displayed. There are a number of venues that have been renovated for, you know, where people live, where they actually take the time to design or have artists specifically design things for buildings. And I would think in New York, of all places, that some corporation would have enough room to display this in their main lobby on the ground floor, almost like the Metropolitan Opera. When you walk up to the Lincoln Center and you look in the front of Lincoln Center, two of the Chagall panels, which were designed for the new Metropolitan Opera House, are right there for everyone to see. And I believe that there should be a way that this particular piece should find a home similar to that. I think it's...
Well, and it may have. We just don't know who the buyer was listed. It wasn't listed, and it may show up. So, you know, that's something that we have to wait and see. But that then becomes the new buyer's... prerogative,
but you
know, and what they're going to do.
But you guys also interact with people that display this, and this is going to be a question that might get some people upset. But also, the people that come to see art nowadays, they don't have the same etiquette they used to have.
Oh,
and that's
don't even get me started.
That's got to be a problem for somebody who invests in something also, looking on the other side of the stone. And then you hear and it used to hear once every couple of years, you'd hear some horrific story. But now it's almost a regular course where people that go, they don't have the appreciation for the sanctity of the art, and a lot of art gets ruined.
Yes, yes. Let's just take the most famous painting of all, for example, the Mona Lisa. I remember the very first time I ever saw the Mona Lisa. I was really excited to go to the Louvre to see this. So I go in this huge gallery, and there on the wall, I am not exaggerating, could have reached out at that. This was in the 70s, touched the painting. And then, of course, they had this horrific... vandalism that happened to it, and now there's no way it's alarmed. And it's not that big, so it's actually a little underwhelming when you see it the first time in person. But the fact that they had to put alarms around it, and you can't even there's no way you can get close to it now. I mean, these things are. There's almost a...
Well, they're masterpieces.
Well, they are. And the reverence for them, there seems to be something very different about it, looking at a painting that has all these bells and whistles on it, that, rather than seeing it just walking into a gallery and just seeing it hanging on a wall without like armed guards and stuff around it. You know, there's things have changed.
Yeah.
Things, and that's unfortunate, but I still believe that something as magnificent as this curtain, with the obvious issue of size, it's a magnificent piece of art, and I just think it's a shame that I would hope that wherever it ends up, that it gets displayed.
And what also gets me is that, you know, when I was young, my parents took me to traipsing around museums in New York and Washington. We used to go to and we supported the arts as a family. And when I go into New York and I see lots of people heading into the galleries. I see lots of the historical museums and everything, but once again, more and more, it costs a lot of money, and less people, I think, are doing it in person, and they're trying to do it virtually, which isn't the same thing.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I don't know if you've ever taken a virtual art tour. It's just not all that in a bag of chips.
Well, it's,
I mean, it's great to be able to see these things if you can't get there. But if you've been to a museum once or twice and you really have an appreciation for it, it's just not the same no matter what you do.
Well, and to bring up the Met curtain is that you can see it in a photograph, and the photographs you get an understanding, but to stand in front of this mammoth piece, that's a whole different experience. And I think you cannot get that virtually. You just cannot.
I'll give you an example. Everybody knows about the painting Sunday in the Park with George. It's the very famous painting. It's at the Chicago, the museum in Chicago.
Museum of Art.
The Art Institute.
Right.
And, Tim was doing the roadshow one weekend, and so I thought, oh, I'm going to roam around, and I'm going to go to the Art Institute. So I pay, and I go into the Art Institute, and I'm walking around because I know this painting is there, and I'd never seen it in person. I'd only seen it in photographs and many, 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 many photographs. So I've seen it a lot, and I know it. So I'm walking around looking for it, and I stumble upon it accidentally. I turned to the left and I looked in this gallery. There must have been just a handful of paintings, and this painting was on its own wall, and it was breathtaking. You know, I saw exactly what I saw in the photographs, but to stand in front of it was awe-inspiring. And that's the
difference
point of seeing art in person. And I think that I'm hoping that this particular piece finds its permanent home so that it can be shared, because it's just such a magnificent thing. And the fact that they even were able to. I'm curious as to what's going to happen to the other scrims, because they were just as spectacular. So I'm wondering if this might have been a test to see what they're going to do with some of the other drops.
Yeah, it's interesting. As a kid, you can see pictures. You can see pictures of Fort Ticonderoga. You go and visit it, and it's amazing. You can see pictures of the Hoover Dam, and you go and you see it, and you go to it, and it's like, wow, this is just unbelievable. The impact of seeing something in person, the way it was meant to be seen, you just can't replace it. You just can't replace it.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I've managed to keep you overtime today.
Hey, we appreciate it. Hey, also, I don't know if you saw on Facebook, we won our Christmas light decorating.
Yes, congratulations.
Greg and I won.
How long did it take you to set up that display?
Oh, how many? It was like
It was a couple days, but we worked on it little bits at a time and designed it, put it up, and so we won in our community, which was a lot of fun.
All right, congratulations.
So we have bragging rights. That's right. Yes. Yeah, we have bragging rights.
All right, we'll do our holiday edition next week, all right?
Okay.
All right, guys, take care.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye. Bye. Tim, Luke, and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with appraise. This, you'll find them at tqag.com on the web.